taking care of this whole project. There's a lot of work for him, and just for you guys to know, it included not only taking the pictures, but he designed the whole layout and stuff. And if you have any recommendations for him on how to change it, you can tell him, because if you hope to do it in future years, and you know, we could do it differently or better, or you know, it's all from scratch.
We're going to shine one as well.
Right, we're going to maybe do one for the Shinebeck guys. Oh, I get all these tokens for free? David, you need these?
I know we did get an envelope. There's any more envelopes?
David, you need this? Okay. All right. First of all, we're going to be starting a new thing in Kaitzman. I was thinking of starting it for next year, but I suggested maybe I start in Kaitzman, so I want to let people know. So maybe start off the week with a short sicha with me. Someone said to me yesterday when we had the Shenabet meeting, someone said, you know, we know that you're the administrator. It scared me a little bit, because I'm not an administrator. I have to administrate, but I want to make sure that I can be involved with every guy. You know, the reason I come to the Tuesday information meetings is because I want to make sure things are being done right. I really want to take an interest and make sure people are taken care of. And you've seen a lot of times where maybe something fell between the cracks, but I was able to pick up one and deal with. But obviously, I see myself first and foremost as a, you know, an educator, and I want to be able to educate every Talmud. And there really isn't a time where I speak to everyone. And so, thinking 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning to start off Seder, I'll introduce a theme, maybe the meat of the week, maybe a different theme, short sicha of 10-15 minutes about something to be able to share. What do people think of that idea? It's not meant to be an idea to punish people or make them be there 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. Baruch Hashem, I think our guys, we're here. We are where we need to be. But it's a nice way to start the week and maybe put some theme on the table or something. So we're going to start it Sunday, you know, of Kaitzman. Remind me if I forget. And Yitzhak Hashem, take it into next year. This Shabbat is going to be a tish with Rav Brody after Seder Limud in the English library. So it wasn't posted because there was a thought that Rav Brody would be giving for the whole yeshiva. In the end, Rav Tzicky's giving a tish for the yeshiva, and you can go to Rav Tzicky's tish if you want, of course. But Rav Brody's also going to give because he had planned to be here. So just keep that in mind. Did David have a chance to talk to you about the complexities of next week? We planned a whole series of Tehillim for next week in the Golan. It seems like they're predicting a lot of rain in the Golan next week, which is wonderful news. Which is wonderful news. Part of that wonderful news is we hope to be. We were planning all along to take people up to the Hermon. Number one, because there are guys from the yeshiva in the army there. You can see at that base in the Hermon. Number two, you know, in the snow. And number three, for those who want to go skiing, be an opportunity to ski in the Hermon. If we take you to the Hermon, now it makes it better and worse. It's better if it rains, because if it rains in the Golan, it snows in the Hermon. It's worse because sometimes the roads are blocked. I mean, you can't get to the Hermon. So it created a lot of complexity, and there's a chance we may be going to the Hermon on Sunday. They're predicting rain Monday to Wednesday. So there's a chance we may go on Sunday to get up to the Hermon before it gets blocked off. So b'kitzur, the whole exact schedule of the week is now, you know, thrown in. It doesn't affect you. You'll just do whatever they tell you. I'm just saying, there's a lot of work going into figuring out how to do it best. What I want to say about the Hermon is, if we take it to the Hermon, yeshiva will pay the entrance fee into the Hermon. It's like an entrance fee to get into the whole area, and you can play in the snow and do whatever you want. If you want to go skiing, yeshiva's not going to pay, like, that's an expensive thing for each guy. So if you want to go skiing while we're in the Hermon, you could conceivably, you know, bring money and pay. I don't know how much it costs in the Hermon to go skiing. 150 shekel used to be. I don't know exactly what it is today. So what I'm saying is, in general, I highly recommend to people to bring money for the Golan. Because in Chespin itself, they have a pizza store, very good pizza store. They have a shawarma place, which is like shawarma. hot dogs, hamburgers. They have a bakery. Like, it's a nice place, and you may want to spend money there. And for sure, if you're considering going skiing, so you should definitely bring the appropriate condiments for that. In any case, it's changing, you know, a little bit how the week's going to go. And obviously, we have to go depending on the weather, too. It might mean that you'll have more time to learn in the yeshiva there. I mean, you know what to do when it rains. Right? You know, you can learn. In addition, they have a gym, which we're going to try and figure out, you know, if it rains, if it's available, when it's available. you know, we had asked people to let David Bratzvitz know if you're bringing a basketball or a football or a soccer ball. Nobody let him know. So please do let him know, because we want to make sure that we have those things, and if we don't, we want to make sure we get them. Right, so that, you know, that's available to you when you're there. in addition, obviously, whether there's a lot of Tehillim or a little of Tehillim, there'll definitely be a lot of time to learn there. That's part of it. We're not going on Tehillim for a week. Right? Every morning they'll be learning, every night they'll be learning, and if there's rain, they'll be learning in the afternoon. And so bring whatever svarim are appropriate for that purpose for you. Gemara Pesachim, Gemara Gittin, Shnei Mikas HaTargum, HaGadah. There'll be, most of the shurim there are going to be about Pesach. So I would have HaGadah, I would have Rambam, Zmanim, I would have Gemara Pesachim, you know, to each their own, you know, along those lines. So just make sure you bring what you need for the Golan. Okay, let's take questions about this first, and then we can talk about what we're here for, questions and answers. Yes?
For the Golan, would you be able to have a full, like, would you be able to take a full day to go skiing, or would it just be the time of the day?
Well, if we go to the Charon, it's going to be for multiple hours.
Right.
It's not going to be... it's not going to be...
If you want to get, like, a full day in...
If you're a master skier and more than the other people are just going there to play a little football in the snow, you want to take a day for yourself to go there, speak to David and see if you're going to arrange it. I mean, the yeshiva is going to go there for X number of hours, right? And you could use that, you know, you could talk to him, you know, I don't know if it's known yet because we're trying to figure out the weather. You, Noah Schwartz, and three other guys want to, instead of going to the Yehudia one day, go up to the Golan and go skiing. You'll talk to him. Okay, okay, other question. Bendov, did you raise your hand before?
No, I was wondering, is his house over there?
In the English library. Mm-hmm. Other things about the Golan? Okay, so great. Let's open up the floor for all kinds of interesting questions or non-interesting questions. Yes?
Can you just go through the process of selling chametz or lack thereof that happens here in Yeshiva for, like, for the stuff that we have, that what we want to keep, what we can't keep, or...
I don't know exactly what the Yeshiva is arranging, and I suggested to the other people who asked me to speak to David about it. You know, he should know. If he doesn't know, he'll find out for you exactly what the story is with that. Obviously, there are many rabbis in Israel who sell chametz. The question is leaving it within the yeshiva, and David either knows it or will, you know, will know it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How applicable is Onad today?
Oh no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, so how can, you know, certain Torah shops that clearly overcharge a ridiculous amount, right, mm-hmm, with a discount?
So the Torah says twice, "Lo tonu ish et amito." Lo tonu ish et amito. And that's called ona'ah. So why does it say it twice? So the Gemara explains that there's two types of ona'ah. There's ona'as mamon and ona'as dvarim. The word ona'ah means to oppress, to cause someone pain. So don't pick on someone else through money or through verbal. Ona'as dvarim. Ona'as dvarim, we know what that means. It's to trash someone. It's to hurt, cause someone pain through the words you say to them. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia Daf Nun Ches gives an example of, you remind someone about negative things in their past. You know, guy, you say, oh, remember you were once a bum, you did terrible things. That's not a nice thing. It makes the person feel really bad. And again, we grew up in cultures where picking on people is a basic part of our lives. We should just know that it's an issur d'orais and very applicable today and unfortunately very widespread. In general, the things, you know, we do with our dibur are things that we're very weak on as a whole. So that's onas dvarim. I assume Yitzi's question was mainly about onas dvarim, about onas mamon. Onas mamon is what we call today fraud. Where you overcharge for something. And if it's more than a sixth of its value, so the mekach is even batel, meaning the sale doesn't go through. The Yitzi's question is, we live in a world today where the price fluctuation is so wide, meaning in the old days, you didn't have a capitalistic, but there were prices that were set. Wheat went for this, and that's what it was sold like everywhere. Today, so much of it is supply and demand, flexibility, how far the store is, where exactly it is. Just think of airports, you know. Someone's got to tell people in the airport that a tuna sandwich does not cost $13. This is as they bring them back into the regular world. It's like, you know, a little 3-ounce can of cola does not cost $4.50. They just like live in their own world there. Especially after they take away the liquids thing, you know what I'm saying? They're like selling a bottle of water for $12.
Baseball games also.
Baseball games. Baseball games are like airports, right? But a different smell. Anyway, so getting back. All right, so like, what story today? So there's a lot of people who hold that, you know, onah works in a very different level, which means it's the sale based on, I mean, the price of something depends on the reality you're in. So again, within that reality, the price would need to be appropriate. Now, the realities may be very limited, meaning there might be most sale situations are not ones where there is a reality, because the reality is set by the sale. And I want to take your question into a broader range of saying that we talk about bringing the geula. How do we bring the geula? I mean, we just keep talking about it and keep giving sichot. You know, bring the geula, kedusha, you know, hello, you know, whatever. I think that part of bringing the geula is preparing Judaism for a world of geula. Let me explain what I mean. A lot of the halachos that we have in the Torah have been found to be inapplicable under new economic realities. Like, examples. Shemitas Ksafim. Right? What do we have for Shemitas Ksafim?
Prisbal.
Other examples. Ribbis. You know, there's an issur to take interest on a loan. Now, if you apply that issur, basically there's no business, because business is about using capital to make money, right? So what do we have for ribbis? Heteriska. Okay. The Jews didn't live in Israel, in the land of Israel, for many years, so they didn't have to deal with Shemitah's Karka. But when they finally came back, we have Hetemachira. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of the rabbis criticize the Hetemachira as some fiction of avoiding halacha. Is it different than Prusbal or Heteriska? It is slightly different because there are possibly problems with it. Or Mechira's Chametz, right, which Andy asked about. Mechira's Chametz is not a pushed thing. A lot of people found a lot of problems with it. But it was that the economic realities meant that the halachas of the Torah couldn't be kept that way. It just wasn't possible. Now again, obviously there are differences between economic issues and Issur Heter issues, and you know, and you have to know where to draw the line and how you can apply different things. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, close the door, please. People can go in and out. It just, you know, it's disturbing the noise. Please, people, go in and out. It's not fine to go in and out. Just the noise is coming through the open doors. Anyway, I was once in a rabbinic convention. It's not fair to call it a rabbinic convention. I was a Wexner fellow with a lot of other rabbinical students. I was the most right wing. Most of them were conservative, reform, reconstructionist, the whole nine yards. And so you learn a lot about how people view the world. So one of the rabbinical candidates, a woman from HUC, she showed me her notes on a shiur that she had proving that Rav Moshe Feinstein is a reform rabbi. So she asked me what I thought. So I actually thought of like six or seven other tshuvas she didn't have in her notes that show that he's a reform rabbi. You know, things where Rav Moshe clearly changed what was accepted before him. And so I said, you know, he was a reform rabbi, but with a lowercase r, not an uppercase r. Because Rav Moshe Feinstein's, you know, changes, so to speak, were based on knowing the system really well and seeing that now that the government watches over the milk industry, so Chalav Akum, which was before 51% us or 49% mutter, now becomes 51% mutter and 49% us. So there might be a change in practice, but it's a change that's based on the change in reality that and understanding the system up to that point. Why am I saying all this? Clearly, the Torah doesn't want us to live in a society where we avoid ribbis with heteriska, where we avoid shemitah with heter mechira, where we avoid chametz with mechira's chametz, where we, and the list can go on this. That's not the way we're supposed to be living. It's a solution we found as a band-aid in a society. And if we live in a society that revolves around capital being used this way, so how are you going to live that way with these laws? So I think what we need to do, part of what we need to do to bring the gula is to figure out how to build a society that allows you to keep the halachot of the Torah as they're meant to be kept, but live in our world as it's meant to be lived. And part of that's onah. Onah means people are protected. It means people aren't taken advantage of by sales. That's something that needs to be included as part of our society. Yet, we need to take into account that an ice cream man selling ice cream in the Red Canyon is going to need to charge more, and nobody's going to sell ice cream there. So if you want someone to sell ice cream there, you got to let him charge more. So how do you do this? Making sure that he's not gouging your eye out. So we have to work that out. So right now within our reality, I'm telling you that it's only when there's a real price that there can be a fluctuation from a price. And sometimes there is. Okay, next. Yes?
Can you explain like the selling of chametz, like who's allowed to do it and who's not allowed to do it, and when it should be done, when it should be done?
So you should know that the selling of chametz is a very controversial thing. It's a very controversial thing because clearly we're supposed to be getting rid of the chametz, right? And that's why. You know, why was the heter created? Anyone else? Why suddenly in a certain point in history was there hefsid mamon? Jews had very few businesses they were allowed to. How come in the Tanakh, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, we don't find heter mechiras chametz? In the Middle Ages, there were very few businesses Jews were allowed to have, and one of them was being an innkeeper. And you wonder, an innkeeper, how many people went to hotels? Or, you know, it was a Holiday Inn. What was an innkeeper in those days? Mainly a place for people to go to
drink.
And the Jews had beer, a lot of beer. And beer was made in a certain season because it's when the crops came in. And if the Jews were going to destroy all their beer, they would have no business. That's the Hefsid Mammon we're talking about. It's Pashat. That in the reality we have today, there's no way it would be mutter for regular people to sell the chametz. Like a regular person, a guy has like a bottle of ketchup and, you know, two Wheaties boxes. That's not what they were talking about. I said, a regular person, if you own a grocery store, that's something else, right? Because that's your whole business. It could really be a hafsid mama. But you're not supposed to sell your chametz. Okay, I have a bag of pretzels. We'll put it in the chametz cabinet. No, you're supposed to get rid of your chametz. That's what the Torah says. Now, in addition, another limitation on mechiras chametz is from the original heter, it stipulated clearly not to sell chametz gomer. Meil chametz that's like mixed in, so it's already, you know, more meikel to begin with. It's not kares, right? But you're not supposed to sell. You're not allowed to sell bread, pretzels, chametz gomer. So again, I think it makes sense. You know, we have stuff that's not really chametz, right? Mamish not really chametz, right? Some dip, which, you know, has some kind of, you know, it's suffix. So you put in a cabinet and you sell it. So you avoid, you know, why should you throw out something that's not really chametz? But you should try and finish whatever you can. And it's also to sell chametz gomer. The main issue that's discussed regarding mechiras chametz is the process of the mechira. It needs to be a real mechira and done through the kinyanim that work with a goyim. There's a lot of chumras by mechiras chametz because since there was a chashash that people wouldn't take it seriously, wouldn't view it as a real mechira, they do it in a way that it's clear that it's mechira. You do a lot of kinyanim and a lot of things to make sure that it's clear that you're doing the mechira. And definitely it needs to be clear to you that it is a mechira and you need to set it aside and have a place and be ready that it's accessible for a goy to come in. For example, if you're going away and you're selling chametz in your home in New York, you have to leave a key with a neighbor and tell the rabbi where the key is so that the goy can take it if he wants it, because you're selling it to him, right? So, and I don't know what more you want me to answer regarding your question, but that is kind of the thing. You have to have a place that's set aside in your house that technically you're renting out to the goy, because if you can have a goy's chametz in your home, it's got to be that you're giving that place aside. It's nice to write in the document also that, and chametz anywhere else that is in my house, in case you forgot something and left it in the cabinet, and you didn't realize, so you don't get in trouble. Hetzem mechiras chametz is supposed to be like, for a guy who doesn't sell beer, it's supposed to be just a way of protecting yourself, but not what you should be relying upon. You're supposed to consume the chametz. Eat it. The Baal HaMor says, we're mekayim teshbisu by eating chametz. What a great mitzvah. You eat the chametz. Okay, Zev, did that answer your question? The guy saw Zev Deitch. We had this picture. I learned some people's Hebrew names. Yes.
What is the deal with the minhag to say how Maariv Seder night?
It's a good question, particularly because we say halal at the Seder night. We say halal the next day, three times. That's a trivia question. What is the only day where we say halal three times on that day? First day of Pesach. Yeah, that's a trivia question right there. Okay. The Rishonim ask about saying halal at the Seder night, especially because a lot of the halachic nuances about it. It's split. We had eaten a meal in the middle. And Rav Haigon explains that halal on the Seder night is different because it's shira, which seems to be that it's not commemorating something in the past, but expressing appreciation of something happening in the present. You're going out of Mitzrayim. That leaves the night and the day. I think the reason there's a minute to say halal at night is because the night of Pesach is in and of itself its own chag. There's a pasuk people quote called Lel Hiskadesh Chag. The truth is that the night of Pesach is a very interesting moment, particularly if you understand what's going on. If you look at the Torah mentions a number of times Chag HaPesach, which takes place on what day of the year? The 14th of Nisan, which we call Erev Pesach. The Chag HaPesach was the day when you brought your korban, and it ended like days end in the Mishkan and the Mikdash at night, the nights go after the day, when you finished consuming the korban Pesach while you told about the story. The night is the overlap, the interface between Chag HaPesach on the 14th and Chag HaMatzos, which is on the 15th. The night is the overlap. So it is its own Yom Tov to a certain extent too, and I think that's why we say Halal. Yes?
What's with the black stripe and these, the frilly things on
it? The frilly things.
Yeah.
On the black stripe, a lot of people say, Zecher L'Tcheles. The obvious question would be,
why is it
black? There's different suggestions made about that. Some people say it's only Zecher. You don't want you to think it's actually Zecher. Some people say they only have black dye. The truth is that I think, according to all that logic, that stripes on the talus should be blue. Which is why my talus is so old. Because on the one hand, I need a new talus. On the one hand, I think I have to buy a blue one. On the other hand, I'm going to buy a blue one. Then we get in trouble. Robert, what do you think about wearing a blue talus?
Well,
you think I dive in Shari Zion, no? I don't know which one.
Yeah,
a shul that's like
that.
What? Suburban? No, Suburban's okay. I meant, there's a shul that's like Conservadox. Which one's Conservadox? I don't say Suburban. Suburban? Shari Zion, no? What's Shari Zion? Where they have the weddings, what's that called? Shari Zion? Beth Tvila? How's that? We're tagged with blue towels, I think he's from Beth Tvila, right? We get in trouble.
You don't have to.
Sorry?
If you have Tchilas, then you don't have to have Zecher now.
If you have, so one could conceivably make that case. This is the custom, so we continue it, right? Other questions? Yes?
If it comes down to baltashlis or not reasonable, you shouldn't really be selling what you should do.
Chametz? It's not baltashlis to get rid of chametz. It's a kiyum mitzvah.
So
it's not baltashlis. It's burning it different? Burning's like, cool, it's not baltashlis because we get to take out our pyro, you know, inside feelings. You Makayim the mitzvah of tashbihs are other ways too, according to many Mishonim. Throwing it out? Is it better to eat it than throw it out? It's better to eat it. It is definitely better to eat it. But okay, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, it's a mitzvah. Yeah. When does it come into play? That's a good question. Now, the truth is, that's why I think why we do beer so close to the time. Like, why not get rid of it 3 days in advance? We want on some level Mekayim beer in the time when it's supposed to be happening. There's a general chakir within Tashbisa, which means is it destroying the chametz or making sure you don't have chametz by the time things come along, and that's what your question depends upon. You can ask Avi, you learned Pesachim last year. Jeremy. Where's Jeremy? Oh, Jeremy's there. You can ask that. Stepner, where's Stepner? They learned Pesachim last year. You can ask all the chakiris in Tashbisa and Bal Yirah. And how you understand Tashbisa depends on its relationship with Bal Yirah, because Bal Yirah is simply not having it. Tashbisa is destroying it. We could go nuts right here all of a sudden, yes? A follow up! Yes, follow up.
Now, in mind,
if anything, it's Pashat that it would be, if I'm more like Rosh Chodesh, when you're getting into Nisan.
I would eat anyway.
You need a Hetzer to eat, you're saying.
No, it's Chametz saying, it's not.
Eat. What did they do to you in Yeshiva? Yes? A friend of yours.
Not any of that.
Okay, yeah.
What would the Yeshiva hope that the, or hope slash encourage the kid would do? Would they also feel disappointed if he chose to remain a non-Mormon?
I never thought of the question, what I would feel.
And also, and
yeshiva or the Jewish people? You're asking me a Allah question, or you're asking me about Shabbat Kotel?
Partially as a Machanah of children, I would hope that they're Jewish.
Okay, what's the next question?
And then how does it relate to how we view the purpose of going in general?
I'm sure all of you had this question in mind, right? How you stole the question from a lot of people. So first of all, if a person finds out they're not Jewish, they have a choice to decide whether they want to be Jewish. They can become a ger or not. They have to make that decision. In the particular case of a person in that situation, I think, you know, we'd encourage them to remain in because they've been trained as a Jew, they've lived their lives as a Jew, and a lot of the hesitation we have regarding gerim is the sense that they've lived a different life and they're not going to be really committed to this life. A person who's really lived as a committed Jew, and suddenly they find out they have a choice, so then there's no reason to think that if they decide to be committed, they're not going to be committed, right? In general, we believe that the Jewish people are a special nation who live on a higher level and have a higher destiny. How different it is, you know, a matter of debate, you know, but being a Jew is a great zchut. That's how we view it. That zchut, the fact that we view it as zchut doesn't mean we try and get other people to be Jewish. We don't. Right? We don't. This situation is a unique situation. I don't know if every Jew believes what I'm about to say, but I definitely believe that every person has a purpose and is created for a reason and needs to realize that purpose no matter who they are and what they are. Jewish people have a special destiny. Right? Baruch Elokeinu she'ebronu l'chvodo v'hivdilonu min hatov. We say that, right? Can't imagine we would feel that it was bad that people recognize the truth. We definitely talk about how by Yom Ahu everyone will recognize the truth. Now that may not be people converting to Judaism, although it's discussed, right? But would we feel bad that people like and respect Judaism? You're saying, well, what would it mean with the natural world order? That's God's job, right? You happy that people see the truth for what it is, right? Yes.
Almost based on that, but how do we reconcile the fact that I believe that if there's a non-Jew who's, you know, in their life in that situation, you can help them. There are certain reasons why you should nowadays, shalom or whatever, but maker then I don't think you have to.
The New York Times article.
Perhaps, I don't know.
The real question, the answer to your question begins with the assumption you have behind your question. The assumption that the Western world makes when it comes to mitzvot versus life and death is that clearly life and death should be first. Because mitzvot are a nice ritual that you have. Africans wear their kippahs, you wear your kippah. I mean, let me finish and then you'll see what I'm saying. You can agree or disagree. The world assumes that life is definitely more valuable than anything else. Judaism definitely doesn't make that assumption. Right? There are things that are yoharek v'ayavar, which means that life is not necessarily valuable, more valuable than certain issues. I think we're done, right? Okay. Anyway, we believe that the purpose of our lives is more important than life itself. Life without purpose isn't worth it, so to speak. That's why if you're asked to worship Avodah Zarah, you wouldn't do it. Or any wrong thing which makes a bad impression on other people, you wouldn't do before Hesir, because, right? In fact, that's why the Gemara has a question about whether you should be Mechallel Shabbos to save someone's life. What's the answer the Gemara gives, for why we do it? Why you Mechallel Shabbos to save a life of a Jew, which the Gemara is talking about. Why?
Because
of a Jew. Mutav Shechallelu Shabbos Echos V'yikayim Shabbos Harbe. Meaning, we should be Mechallel Shabbos and think how many Shabbos this person is going to keep. And we read that Gemara like, you need a reason to Mechallel Shabbos to save someone's life? The cheshbon made is a utilitarian one. What's the utilitarian cheshbon? We like Shabbos. The guy's going to die, he's not going to keep Shabbos anymore, right? If that's the svara behind saving someone's life for Shabbos, so then if a person's not keeping Shabbos. So again, but it really starts off with the issue of whether there can be something more valuable than life itself. That's the real issue. Now, so again, a goy isn't going to keep Shabbos, so Shabbos is now more important. Now, when we talk about Darkei Shalom, and the Rishonim HaFrom talk about this, you don't have to necessarily limit it to Goyim are going to find out and go on a pogrom. It can also be, we live in a world today where Goyim and Jews work symbiotically, as opposed to societies and worlds where it was kind of like the way Jews and Arabs interact today, unfortunately, in Israel, where every Arab wishes he could kill every Jew. And Jews, I don't think every Jew wishes it. I should take that back. I don't think every Arab wishes it could kill every Jew. I think the recent poll was 74%. Exactly. You know what it was. I'm saying a lot of the Arabs wish they could kill every Jew. I think it's less of Jews. Jews and Arabs don't live as one people in Israel today, and that's an unfortunate thing. In most of the world, to a certain extent, all Jews and all people and all faiths and all races and all religions live as one. In that world, we're all on the same team as far as saving each other. A lot of people say that Darkei Shalom should be taken in that broader context. It doesn't answer your question. I mean, your question is about the root principle. I'm just adding to it. I answered that question. I tried to, right? I'm just explaining to you what the broader context of Darkei Shalom could mean in a world as we see it today, and also encouraging you to realize that the halacha, when formulated, is talking about a world that lived very differently than the world we have today.
So I was saying, you say in terms of, you know, there are things that are greater than the value of life, which I agree with. So, but in a case where you're not necessarily, you know, there's no losing anything, you know, why they're created some level.
Losing a lot when you save a person's life on Shabbos. You're being Mechallel Shabbos.
On Shabbos? Even if it's not on Shabbos, do you have to save them?
We'll get to that in a second. But I just want to say one more thing about the issue of life itself. The issue of life itself. I've mentioned a couple times, if God's got people heard it, whatever. The world as a whole, most of the world, views life as a very sanctified thing, and therefore we don't have the death penalty. It's interesting that in America there's still a lot of states where they do. You know, Amnesty International has America in their report every year for the death penalty. Europe finds America to be barbaric because they have the death penalty. You don't see it that way. I mean, a lot of Americans don't see it that way, especially having Bush in office for 8 years. I don't know if that made it work better or worse, meaning the fact that he's from a state that has the death penalty, so that caused people to realize that it's barbaric, or the president comes from Texas, they kill people. Most of the Western civilized enlightened world use the death penalty as barbaric. Torah has a death penalty. And I think the explanation is, and you see it in the cultures we come from, that you may think you're protecting human life by not killing murderers, but by that you're cheapening the value of human life. There are certain things that are so significant that the punishment has to be death. That's an important point. Getting back to that, during the week we talk about something else. We talk about people. If a person is doing dangerous things for the world, So you can understand why you wouldn't want to save him. Anyone would kill him, you wouldn't want to save him. And that's usually the distinction made. You should save a guy's life during the week, for sure, right?
People. That's Nikar Adin, not Shal or anything like that.
Nikar Adin, you're thinking about Shabbos. Shabbos. That's right. Ein Mali Marid is talking about particularly someone negative, with some negativity to it. That's why I said if there's a negative person who's causing trouble, or and again, you have to remember what it meant for the Jews in those times. Most Goyim caused a lot of trouble, persecuted the Jews. If you were walking by a pit and an SS officer were in the pit, would you take him out?
Probably not.
If you get into maybe certain people, you should shoot him too. Right? The movie Defiance. I want to see the movie. Anyone saw it on the internet? It's good, or it's just like Hollywood, you know, creepy. It's hard for me to think of James Bond, though. You know, just.
It was good.
You have to buy it first.
People want to see the Jews can fight too. We're tough guys. I know Jews are tough guys. JDL.
Good stuff.
JDL. Never again. And the way we can do that is going like this. I said that we should never again be going like this. Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Yes.
What's the position? I guess like. Releasing hundreds of terrorists, whether or not they have blood on their hands, or one Jewish soldier.
You know, the Gemara talks about the question. We'll get to the dead in a second. Gemara talks about the question, and it says in Gittin, Ein poden seshvun yes mikmed man. You're not allowed to buy back captives for more than they're worth, and there was a market then. Because then you're encouraging people to take Jewish captives. The story happened with the Marami Rutenberg. Marami Rutenberg was taken captive. He wouldn't let them ransom him because, you know, he was afraid that other rabbis would be taken captives. The situation is a little different in Israel today, particularly because you're dealing with a soldier. And a soldier is someone who is sent as a shaliach of the Jewish people to defend them. A. B. It's also a situation where for soldiers to have the morale and confidence to do their job, they have to know they're going to be protected. So those are facets that we don't find in halacha, because halacha doesn't talk about the Jewish army. Again, we talk about bringing the geula. Part of it is trying to start to formulate these things. And that's why I don't think that there's a clear rabbinic position that one can emphatically state. Personally, I'm against it. You know, I'm not against releasing, you know, I'm against two things. I'm against releasing terrorists who there's a very high percentage you're going to kill other people because in the end you've caused indirectly the deaths of many, many people and made it easier for a terrorist to become a terrorist because he knows he can get free. Even if people don't have blood on their hands, I'm against situations where so many terrorists are released that it inspires them to take captives, which I think has happened. So then, you know, if in the 80s they wouldn't have done it, so then Gilad Shalit wouldn't have been taken because they know it wouldn't have made a difference. I don't know. That's a personal opinion. The dead bodies is something else. The dead bodies, I think, is not a Jewish thing. Meaning, we believe in the guf and taking care of the guf and burial and etc. But we don't believe in that in some sanctified way that it's worth the value of a human life for. I think that's other cultures. The values of other cultures have gotten and have crept into Judaism. To risk another person's human life to get back a body? We shouldn't be doing that. Now, again, if that has implications for the army, which gets back to what I said before, you're with me? That it's important to bring back the body of a dead soldier so that soldiers will fight better, which I don't think is true. I don't think many people are deeply concerned about what may happen to them after they're dead. The army's not going to take my body back? I'm not going to fight. What if I die? You'll be dead. Like, you know, it's okay, right? All this having been said, there has to be a lot of sympathy for families who go through these situations. You know, it's hard to really evaluate it if you're not, you know, going through it yourself. You know, I don't know if Dan was able to arrange it to go to the tent. We were trying to arrange for the guys to go to the tent and meet the Shalits and hear about the situation. And there were a lot of ministers who went to the tent even though they voted against the deal. We have to show sympathy and care, and we do, and etc. Okay? You have to give someone else a chance. I just feel, you know, we'll get back. Yeah.
Could you explain Birkas Hachama and its special significance to this year?
Special significance. So, first of all, the yeshiva is having a special program in Erev Pesach. You guys aware of this? I mentioned it. On the roof, there's going to be a lot of dignitaries, etc. If you're around Erev Pesach, you, your parents, etc., you should let Gedalia know so you can have tickets. Tickets. Dude. The yeshiva is actually having a Yom Iyun on Monday, 4 days from now, on the topic. I feel bad that it ended up being when we went to spin, blah, 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 blah. You know, we apologize. Okay, you know, it can be done all the time when we want it to be done. In addition, there's a lot of books that are coming out now on the topic. So, basically, Birkat HaChama is recognizing God as the creator of the sun, first thing created, and thus the world, at a time when astronomically we view the sun as being back in the exact, and this other satellites and stars and things, in the position it was at the time of creation. And that happens once every 28 years, right? Or whatever, you know, once every 28 years. Now, to understand why that happens once every 20 years and what exactly is at the right position, so you got to read the books. And there are books. And, you know, you ever read the Rambam, he doesn't just say you go out to the moon and say hi, moon. The Rambam tells you how exactly the moon works and the stars work. And it's amazing to see how people didn't have the technology we have today, what they understood. Okay, it's impossible scientifically to talk about when is the sun back at the point of creation. You know, but religiously you can talk about it being a certain point and an alignment, which scientists can talk about. There is an alignment. The question is, what was the alignment at the time of creation? And if you want to understand why we believe that was the alignment at the time of creation, read the books. Okay, that's a good question. I remember the last Birkat HaChama. I was a little kid. I remember we went outside. I remember. Yes?
Wait, just two things. Quick things about Birkat HaChama. Is there any significance if you're outside of Eretz Yisrael? Like, should you also go out?
Should always be in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, is Birkat HaChama shach wherever you are? Creation is creation, man.
Was there something to say? Like, if you're going to put
yeah, there's a bracha. Birkat HaChama.
That's all?
Buy the book. Okay. It'll give you, like, the 14 tefillos to say before. I really like the sun. I show you what glasses to wear. You know, Judaism likes rituals, so you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of stuff going on. Do it this way. You gotta, you know, say it with your right hand in the air. I don't know. I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of stuff going down. You said Shem Yichud first. You daven Leil Nishmas. What?
That's grad 30 versus
15. Yeah. Oh, sure. By the way, my nephew, my brother in Tinek has a son. He's having his tonsils taken out. So my brother asked that we should all keep him in mind. His name is Yonathan Shalom ben Sarah Dvorah. Okay, so we should all keep him in mind. My brother's a doctor, told me that anytime you have anesthesia, it's always something, you know, it's not a push thing. I called him to give him advice on what flavor ice cream to get. I figured, you know, he could use some help with his parents negotiating. You shouldn't buy him like some Breyers or something. You should get him the real deal stuff. Anyway, so I called him to push him. All right. Yes.
When does someone have an obligation to like tell someone that they're doing something wrong?
The Torah says, "Ocheich tochich es amisecha." Right? You gotta tell
to any of theirs that's their derabanan.
Slow down. Slow down. You want to tell people to do the right thing. Deraisa, derabanan, right? And in general, you want to give people good advice and help them succeed. And it cuts back to the basic assumption that we don't see the goal of our lives as succeeding ourselves. We see the goal of our lives as winning color war, which means that the whole team does good things. You with me? Meaning, when would you want a guy to do right in color war? Is it the sporting activities, the arts, sending a letter home to his parents? Like, which things in color war would you want him to do right? Everything, right? You guys know what I'm talking about? Enough color war in your camps? Do you still write letters home in camp?
No.
What do people do? Emails? What?
The
kids get emails. Oh, they have cell phones. You're not allowed to use cell phones in the camps.
They still have.
Kids have cell phones. And they use them in hiding. As long as it's not seen in the public thing, we're okay. That's shot. Uh-huh. Because I remember when I was in camp, we used to send letters home, or we were supposed to send letters home. So in colorway, you got a point and a half for every letter you sent home. So I remember doing this. Take one letter, dear, put an envelope, fold it up. Next letter, I write a two on the letter, mom, put another, fold it up. Comma. We got like 30 points. Who cares about the expense, you know? Expense, we were kids. We just, you know, we didn't buy the stamps. Our parents gave them to us. Besides, our parents gave us like 45 stamps to use for the summer. We'd use them all in color war. My mother would get 45 letters. Dear mom, it's like putting together one of these, you know, cartoons. Dear mom, comma, it is color war. She, and you know how she knew when it was color war? 45 letters. So, yes, we should care about our own. The reason we don't care about other people's spiritual growth so much, by the way, is we don't care about our own spiritual growth so much either. Right? We should care about our own spiritual growth. We should realize we're all on the same team, care about other people's spiritual growth. I think part of the question is that we believe that we don't give tochacha well. And if you're going to give tochacha in a way that's going to turn someone off, that's not useful, right? That's bad. And so you have to know yourself, the person, the situation, and give tochacha in a way that it's constructive, right? Yes? How many people are definitely staying Shanabat next year? Oh, it's a different question. Yeah, another question.
Yeah.
I want to know if it changed since yesterday.
No.
I'm staying.
I have a friend who called me from the U.S. college with a non-Jewish roommate wondering in terms of Digas Chametz exactly to what extent...
He'd sell his Chametz to his roommate.
Right, but to what extent should he go in terms of cleaning out his roommate stuff or having to help him? It's like...
It's complicated Zach. It's a complicated Zach. Complicated time. Definitely shouldn't have any of his roommate's chametz in his area of the room. I assume the way these rooms work is that each one has an area that's their own, right?
Enough, I guess.
It has to be that way for this.
Right.
Meaning, you would have to say, and maybe even be mocher, you know, look, we have a ritual thing that we're not allowed to own or have in our possession. I would like you to give me a dollar and buy the refrigerator. So that it is your refrigerator totally for Pesach. And make sure that whatever communal areas of the room, you know, either they should be sold to him. And people live with Pesach in the rooms too. Ouch. And we're in situations where people could take from each other's chametz. I mean, they're allowed to take cookies from each other, right? So it's chametz accessible to you.
Whoa. It's just they like midterms.
Whoa.
It's bad
news. Whoa. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm like,
this is bad news for the Jews right here. Oh man. So I'm saying, you know, right, the guy has a right to own his chametz. We're not trying to convert the guy into, you know, we're not trying to get them, they have a right to have chametz. Thank God the Gemara Darshan is a pasuk, lo yirah l'chasot. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to see the chametz of a guy either. It's not Pesach. It's not Pesach without all those Pesach foods, you know. Think about it, you mamish. I believe that if Chazal were around today, they would say it's also to have a goyish roommate for that reason. You know why? How careful are we that chametz shouldn't fall on... Imagine a piece of chametz falls on the counter, you put your food down, you're over in Issacharis. I would say you're not allowed to eat in the room. Not allowed! You shouldn't eat in the room. The chashash is insane. You with me? I'm saying, again, you think how machmir, because in Issacharis, Chazal were on these Yisurim. The concept that you're living with chametz. Whoa. You with me?
Yeah.
Whoa. Radberg, you understand what I'm saying here?
How do you tell you?
A sticky situation.
You can't live with
it. Okay, next. Yes.
So follow up on Ike's question before. If you know that your friend is definitely going to reject any advice you're going to give him.
If you can give it in a good way, that's not going to turn them off. Generally, people who would reject advice would be turned off by it. But if there were a case where you could tell him what's right, even though he won't accept it, that's okay. Especially because it's important for a person to know, and sometimes in the long run it'll keep them from doing the wrong thing. There are situations where the Gemara says that you're sure they're not going to listen to you anyway. Mutif shu shogin valyu mezidin. Better they should do b'shogin not b'mezid. That's if you're sure they're not going to listen anyway. In most situations, it's not true. They may not listen now, but they'll listen next time. And they'll stop them in the future. So you have to be careful with that. So you definitely shouldn't say if it's going to cause bad. You shouldn't say if they're going to do it anyway for sure, forever, whatever. But that's generally not the case. Yes.
There's a thing of like Gemara Pesachim somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Is yours?
Yes.
Let's see. Let me find that one. Yes, the thing of Gemara Pesachim.
That talks about like Yevul Peh, a specific like. I mean, yeah, it's me. You found me.
Gemara Pesachim talks about Yevul Peh.
Yeah. So that there's a terrible things it does. If you speak it,
Yevul Peh is not good.
Yeah, or you listen to it without objecting.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly, like, if you hear someone, so what exactly...
You should say, please don't speak that way around me. It really bothers me.
Two things. One...
Yeah, I don't think people realize that the tone... Can you close the door? I don't think people realize the tone. Meaning, people don't realize when they use disgusting words that it's disgusting. Because they're so used to it from their lives that it just becomes part of how you speak. But there are terms we use because they're expressive of, like, disgustingness, and it just becomes part of our culture to be disgusting, and then we don't realize we're being disgusting. And I hear people around me, you know, not close enough that they're saying to me that I would say something to them, but they're like, you know, I'm sure people don't think so much about me, but I'm saying, you know, nearby, all kind of things I don't want to say.
So,
yeah. Which are not necessarily four-letter words, but they're just a culture of disgustingness, and, you know.
That's...
You with me? So,
yeah, but, like, the Gemara says, like, if you listen to without objecting, you get the same punishment.
You should object in a nice,
so,
respectful way.
So
let's say Amram Avrei. I'd say Amram.
If it's a goy, does that still apply? And like, I'd say if it's not live, like
if it's a
goy,
who are you gonna object to if it's not live?
Like no, like if you have, let's say radio.
Then you're gonna call up the station.
Or
the point is, it should not be coming into you, and you should not expose yourself to things that are that way. You should not expose yourself to things that are that way. Right? That's why the who. Have a drum beat when they say the F word and who are you? Because they know. On the one hand, it's part of expressing the feeling of the song. On the other hand, you can't hear that word. So it's a din in the cheft of the song, but not the gavra listening to it. You probably thought the song was who are you? There's a drum there knocking out one of the words. Who the are you? There's a big drum there. Wallace, you know what I'm talking about? See, I got someone to have something. I think I have Wallace. No one will understand me. Yes.
How are you supposed to handle like Shmira Sinai when you go to the place where
you should poke your eyes out.
You can't walk around with like a bag over your head.
Who told you to wear a bag over your head?
I don't know, I'm saying, I assume you're not supposed to do that.
That's his plan. That's his plan.
And the plan was bag over your head. Look, number one, you have to think twice about where you go.
What about, like, the streets of Manhattan? Are they?
You should think twice about where you go and not go to places, not go to places where this is prevalent and you don't need to go. Again, you need to go a lot of places. You have to live your life. And the Gemara talks about situations where you're not miskaven and it's low efshar. I'm talking, right? You should think about where you're going. And then you say, well, how do I deal with it when I'm there? And, you know, you do your best to avoid looking at things that are going to be problematic for you, right? I mean,
sure.
Right, it's a big nisayon, yeah.
Is it a subjective thing? So whatever you, like, there has to be certain some levels that are definitely objective, but beyond that, is there...
There's two dinim of tznius. There's one area that's erva objectively, and there's one area that depends on society. That halacha we don't have in most of our societies today, because, you know, they're all within the objective category. Meaning, if you're in Iran, you're not allowed to look at a woman's face because they don't open their faces, right? That would be a subjective example. In our societies, you know, we only have the objective halacha. And, you know the parameters. You're right. It's a very difficult thing, and that's why you have to live in the right community. Right? And you have to try and be in the right places. There could be workforce issues, too. You should know. I know there's a lot of firms today where they, where they try to hire only people who are appropriate people in these regards. You with me? They have to be careful with that, obviously, right? So there are firms that only hire Orthodox Jews if they can. You with me? And they don't. Whatever. There are firms. You know, my brother-in-law in Chicago has a building that has to function according to halacha. You with me? You rent that building, IDT. Right, it's called Imdas Torah. That's the name of the building. They have a gym with separate hours. They have a shul, based medrash. Again, the truth is, if you weren't an Orthodox Jew, you probably wouldn't want to buy into that building because the rent is probably a little higher because they have a based medrash. You with me? Close on Shabbos, da da da. So there are a lot of people, and this is, meaning we believe in learning from the world and contributing to the world. We believe that. We should not confuse those beliefs with living in a world in a way that we don't live as Jews. Or as properly as Jews. And unfortunately, we're living in a world where interacting with it has become much harder than it was 50 years ago. And we can't just ignore that. You know, I don't think Judaism believes that interaction with the world is so important that it comes at any cost. I think that's what many monorthodox Jews think Judaism believes. The ideal is, we have to do this. Are they the same thing? For the umpteenth time, just to clarify the beginning of my statement, I believe that a lot of people should go to secular college and that's the right thing for them. And I don't think it's usher for everybody to go to secular college. I think if a person is a person who's going to lose himself religiously in secular college, it's usher. It's a terrible thing, right? Just like anything else. That having been said, I think there are a lot of people for whom going to secular college is the assumed ideal of Judaism. Not the Judaism of life, And it doesn't matter how practical religiously it is or isn't. You with me? And as I remember, I was once at a session with Rabbi Todd Berman, who was a JLI in Brandeis. He and his wife were speaking about JLI. You know what JLI is? It's an organization that sends rabbis to university campuses, you know, to be rabbis. So he was explaining, you know, what goes on campus and what the challenges that the kids face are and what the questions they have and what they do to help. And you can imagine what the session was. So one of the parents stands up, a woman, says, "Rabbi, you are the problem. Not all those things. You are the problem. Because you are giving our kids the impression that the only way they can live on secular campus is with you watching over them. You're the problem. I went to," she said the name of the university, "I was there, I did fine, my husband did fine, my brother did fine, you are, we didn't need you, and you are handicapping our children." The rabbi's like, mother's father gets up, says, "Marge," that's not her name, yeah, obviously he knows it goes, "What are you talking about? Do you know what goes on today as opposed to when we were there?" Start screaming at her. Rabbi's just standing there. "What are you talking about?" My father-in-law, my mother-in-law both went to Columbia. My mother went to Barnard, my father went to Columbia. So afterwards, they were telling me more about it. My father was telling me how the students picketed in the 60s in Columbia to allow women into the men's dormitory. Not to live there, obviously. To allow them in the building. It was like a whole big controversy. Finally, they allowed women into the building of the men's dormitory. Not to live. To enter. Okay. Then a bunch of years later, the whole thing that the women should be allowed in the rooms. So what was agreed? They were allowed in the room as long as the door was open. Yichud. We're talking about 1970 in Colombia. That is not the reality today in these campuses. So what I'm trying to say is people developed an ideology that's not rooted in the correct priorities. It's not like my priority is to know Shas and be an Oved Hashem. And that can be done also being in secular university, working in the workplace with Goyim, whatever thing people have assumed should be right. They develop their priorities otherwise. The priority is getting a job, having a good job, being part of the world. That's the priority. Now, that can be done with Judaism. If that's the priority, when it's harder to do with Judaism, the priorities don't change because that's the first priority. And so there are a lot of parents who want their kids to be religious, who, or people go out into the workforce who want to be religious, but they don't realize that they're putting themselves in situations that are very different than they were 50 years ago. Working today in the workplace is not what it was 50 years ago. The level of men and women together and other issues too. Everyone wore suits and ties. You look back. Now, I'm sure there were always affairs, but it wasn't the same as it is today. Got to think twice about whether a person can function ideally or even well in those kind of realities. And just to come as a matter of assumption to assume, this is the way it's supposed to be, this is the way it's going to be, we're going to be able to handle it. How about? Yeah?
So in today's society, is unsleeves for a woman, is that subjective to whatever society thinks? Like in America, therefore, is short sleeve or sleeveless, is that...
There are two levels of tznius. One is the objective amount that every woman at all times is supposed to cover. That has nothing to do with society. There are societies that sometimes have higher levels of tznius. It's wrong to walk in Mea Sharim without covering what they cover in Mea Sharim because that's what their accepted norms are over there.
So what are the objective levels?
The objective levels are in the vicinity of the elbows and the vicinity of the knees. There are some people who talk about the above the elbow. You know what I'm saying? I personally think women should cover their elbows.
And even if society says under that...
Society can't say that. Society can't say that. And you know what the truth is? The truth is that even though people live in a society where it's... You know what it is, right? It's amazing that there still is a turn-on to a certain extent of things, right? Why do women wear miniskirts? Because they want to be cold? Because there is something to that area of a woman's body that turns people on, even though they see it all the time. V'chule v'chule. Sleeveless. There's something about the arm, you know, the extent, psychologically, you can analyze, whatever.
So,
give this a chance, poor guy has no chance to ask any questions. Yes.
Follow up. So, how is it?
Follow up. First reason it should be awesome to live in Miami is because it is so hot. It is so hot. I had a wedding in Miami in like end of June. It was like walking into a sauna. I mean that because just like the temperature, but the humidity or whatever it was unbelievable. It's disgusting. I think that the reason people retire and move to Miami is to prepare themselves for Gehenna. How much hotter could Gehenna be after Miami? Again, it's hard for me to imagine it could be hotter. That's the harp shot. Anyway, I assume in January, December it's nice, but it's very hard to grow up in Miami and Los Angeles. Michelson here?
Yes, ma'am.
I think Michelson is definitely, as far as I know, an exception to what I'm about to say, and many of the other boys we've had here from Los Angeles and Miami. I met a lot of kids from Los Angeles and Miami. I think we're deeply affected by it. So those who come from cold, you know, in New York, Chicago, Toronto, Montreal, London, Manchester, you know, say, you know what? Wasn't so bad. I mean, it was bad, but not as bad as Miami. And you're right. I think it's a big issue. In general, I think we could say, you know, if you were living 30 years ago and you would see the world today, you would say, how can a person live in this world? You talk about the internet. It's insane. It's insane. I remember before the internet. You weren't exposed to things. You had to like really work hard to find things that were bad. So the thing in principle, I don't have a filter on my computer. In principle. Are you crazy? Grow up. The good news is that I assume you guys will all have filters on your computers. Just your parents now don't realize. They don't realize. Maybe we've gotten to a point where we don't realize. Oive, that's the point I'm trying to make. Judaism has objective values. And you can understand the values if you think about them objectively and not based on your emotions. And the fact that the world becomes one in which it's harder to live those values shouldn't change the values. It goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, oh no, etc. Those cases are different because there you can't survive. You can't survive. A Jew could not survive in Europe without Mechiras Chametz. You couldn't survive in Europe without ribbis. You couldn't survive. You can survive without these things. And if the only way to survive, you know, the only way to protect your religiosity is not to have the internet, so you wouldn't have the internet. You could survive. There's going to be within 10 years a counter-reaction to the internet. I'm telling you. People who just feel their lives have been controlled, their lives have been contaminated, all these things, will say, we don't want to interest it. It's not worth it to us. It's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. People are going to break free of the shackles of George Orwell. You know, the internet's control over people's lives. Because it's going to get worse. You understand what I mean? Everything's going to be the internet. And then one day, people's internet provider is going to go down for half an hour. They're not going to be able to live because the electricity is going to go off. And the alarm is going to lock themselves in their home. They're going to be like, oh my God. Like, I can't do anything without the internet. I can't open my car. I can't go to the bathroom, right? They'll be like, what happened? Or it's really a big Zionist plot to control people's lives. Meaning, either it'll happen and people will realize they're being controlled, or it's planned to happen. And again, I'm not a conspiracy. I'm not like, yeah, I'm telling you it's going to happen because more and more is going to be controlled that way. You're not going to be able to know how to get food because it all goes through the internet. Meaning, it's only a matter of time before we live our lives with automatic voice or thought processes, right, where you say, pizza, and you know, pizza comes. You forget how to walk down the street, take out your wallet, money, get pizza. Maybe it could even be without having to open your mouth. Just the pizza would come, and you would have a belt. And again, if you would have told people the way the world works today 20 years ago, they would have thought you were crazy. Crazy. I remember this, how the world used to work. It worked very differently. You believe this, Ivor? Man. I'm around. Okay, yes, other questions? Are we back to Diskin yet? I think we are. You had, yes.
So back on the captives issue, it wasn't by Republicans hijacking, there was another issue of the fact that you can't just negotiate with terrorists in general or when you're considered to be at war with.
I don't understand the question.
When Rapunda
was hijacked, yes.
So I think that there was something that you weren't allowed to negotiate because you're at war with them. I think that there was someone...
Halacha.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of what I'm going to talk about, but maybe you'll let me know and then I'll know. Yes!
Are you allowed to go to a conservative shul and, for relatives, bar mitzvahs and stuff, especially if it's things you really, really are against and don't believe in?
Well, first of all, if people daven in a halachically problematic way, then you're not yotzei the tefillah. It depends. Conservative is a very broad umbrella. There's a lot of conservative shuls that are basically orthodox. There are some that are basically reform. There's some in between. So number one, you got to make sure you daven properly. So you could ask a question like, let's say it's a problematic davening, so I'm going to go daven hashkama in the right minyan, right? And then I'm going to walk and clap for my cousin's bar mitzvah. So the clapping for your cousin's bar mitzvah is a question that, you know, has been around in America for a long time, and there are a lot of rabbis who said it's usher to go into a conservative shul. The main reason why is because it lends credence. Credence, clear water, revival. Good stuff. It lends credence. It lends credence. That's a significant issue, because if you're misayeh of the aveira and giving them the impression that it's legitimate, you're creating a misimpression that could affect people in a chilul Hashem way. So now you have to consider how much your going there gives off that impression, and the vice versa of the animosity in the family relationship. So these can be complex issues which you have to figure out within your family how to translate it, right? I think for many people, an 18-year-old kid going to a conservative kid's bar mitzvah is not going to say, oh, Zach's here, shows that I'm a great Jew. Probably not interested in being a great Jew. Probably doesn't see you as the samchut on what it means to be a great Jew. So you have a delicate balance to strike, and maybe being there will give you a chance to affect it. So you got to think through all those cheshbonos. If you were the Rav of the Orthodox Shul in Merrick, that would be a different question. You understand why, right? Yes?
What was Judaism?
By the way, did your father tell you we went over old Islander stories?
Yeah, he said
I'm holding like he is.
Yeah.
Did he tell you?
He said you opened up with hockey and it was
We remembered stories that he didn't remember. I could tell he was going, yeah, but he didn't remember.
I don't know, he's a pretty big fan. He went to pretty much every game.
The Islanders set a record for most victories in a row. I think it was 17 or something. The last game, I think it was to tie or to break, I don't remember. They played against the Colorado Rockies. I love a show. Hockey.
Now the Devils.
It was 2-2 in the third period, and the Rockies were playing defense, trying to, you know, come away with a tie. There was no overtime, so that was it. The Rockies had Chico Resch in goal. He was a quintessential announcer now. Chico Resch, he was very good. And the Islanders, you know, in hockey, if you just lay back, it's hard to score. They were just laying back, and the Islanders were rush after rush, and nothing was happening. I was at my friend's house, we were in 8th grade, and we were listening to the radio, because hockey wasn't on television. There were only 6 channels, and, you know. So we were listening on his little transistor radio, and 22 seconds left, Tonelli brings up the puck, Marv Albert, right? And all of a sudden we hear the door open. Darth Vader sleeping, right? And it was his sister. So she came back, I think she had just broken up with someone. She talked to us, and I was like, Avram, the game! So we turned it back on. And they were like, yeah, the Islanders won! Oh, man! They won in the last 20 seconds!
He said you knew your stuff.
Oh, man, I told him who, you know, Tonelli brought it back from the corner down to Gillies. Gillies sent it back, shot, score! It was really... And this is not like soccer. This is where there's a real clock and the game ends and you know how many seconds left. So I'm saying, you knew there was only 17 seconds left. It wasn't it could be this 3 more minutes, 4 more minutes. It's not really that tense. This was 17, 16, Dwight Clark in the corner of the end zone. Meaning, in today's world, in soccer, you don't appreciate that because you never know if it's near the end or not. You're not talking about the catch. They have so many things since then. I don't know if you're old. I saw that live. Dwight Clark. I was rooting for the 49ers too, which made me very happy because I hated the Cowboys. The Cowboys are, you know, pompous. The Cowboys. We like the Cowboys. Okay, what were we talking about? Islanders, Merrick, yes.
What do we believe about torture?
We don't believe in torture.
Or the army saving.
That's a good question. Have you ever heard it discussed a lot? I'm sure it is discussed. torture. It is disgusting. You will have to torture someone to save another life. Sorry?
Even suffix saves somebody's life.
Suffix saves somebody's life. Torture.
It's always a suffix.
Question. Well, Shaila is also who you're doing as a soldier, is that? I've never heard it discussed, so I don't want to say. My bet would be that you'd be allowed to. That'd be my bet. That's part of war. That's part of the war situation. Shaila would be better like people who are innocent. They're innocent, they're just no information. You with me? It's more difficult. Just off the top of my head. You know where you'd look to find that? Tchumen. You know what Tchumen is? There's a company in Alon Shvut called Tzomet. Have you heard of them? They work on like halachic solutions, you know, the gramophones.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. They have a journal called Tchumen, which is like all these modern issues of like halacha and the state of Israel, halacha and modernity, and you know, all that kind of stuff. Yes?
If a person who holds
tears
of
Yad Vashem
goes up to any Israel that only hold one day, and the whole parliament is going to be holding one day.
Okay.
Would you hold one day with them, or would you hold 2 days?
And you would hold 2 days.
How would you pull it off?
How would you pull it off? What's the complexity part?
I'm saying, what if you yourself, I'm staying at a family hold one day.
Okay.
And I go out, maybe I won't stay there, but I will meet in somewhere else.
Okay. Where's the difficult part? I'm trying to find what you're asking.
How is this what it's supposed to do?
It's not what it's supposed to do because you are. You're a different Jew, just like a Kohen, you know, does Birchas Kohanim and the other people don't do Birchas Kohanim. You have a different need to do something different. Especially in the world also, because it's not the Midrash of the ear. Some of you showed him and say, if they were from Chutz Lotz, they'd be giving 2 days here too, and if you were Israeli, it's a different minhag.
If it was, I think you would be someone that would hold
meaning you wouldn't do it out loud, you understand what I'm saying? You wouldn't walk in the middle of their shul and put your tefillin on, or not put your tefillin on, right?
And if you were with another American family that held one day as opposed to 2 days, that'd be more tricky. Because if there is an actual issue, for example, have the same for you.
Do the best you can, right?
So you'd be allowed to hold 2 days, even if it's a family.
You gotta do what your halacha is, you gotta do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If your friends go up for dinner somewhere, at our shkafu, you would not eat that.
Mm-hmm.
And you go there and do not eat, is that an issue of Maris Hain? If some people believe that that's objective.
Meaning the fact that people are seeing you there,
right,
so they're gonna reach the wrong conclusion.
Yeah.
It's marzain, and also you know that you're gonna cause them to do the avera maybe.
But some people do hold that kosher.
That's a complicated question. Marzain. Well, I would say like this: if it's where there's a real chash iser, certain kind of you know, cases like that, you should avoid it. But the question: but hashkacha is legitimate, but. You're not my patita, so worst comes to worst, they'll think you're a little bit more makel on hashkacha. And worst comes to worst, they'll come to eat hashkacha that you don't think is the best hashkacha. That I think is okay. You with me? Yeah.
If you're in the setting, for example, like camp.
When you need to, take up a certain situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're in like a setting like camp where you're trying to have an influence on kids like davening, how much can
good
you
luck.
Sacrifice your own davening to help kids?
That's a good question.
That's a very good question.
It's a hard question to answer because you want me to quantify it and tell you 32% Ashrei versus Avodat Zion, you know. It's very hard to quantify these things. The best thing, of course, in schools and camps is to daven on your own first.
Is it better to daven on your own chiyus?
Sure, and this way you're not davening. I'm saying you're just taking care of the kids doing davening. Again, in a situation where you really need to. I think in most field situations, you can daven more or less okay. It depends on the kids, but if it's really one where you have to be...
Better daven the chiyus?
No, with the minion, I meant. For the minion, have it earlier.
Could he daven like a little?
So let me just finish. So I'm saying most situations that I've been in, you can more or less daven. You know, little. I'm talking about where you really have to be coaching the whole time. It's about striking a balance between trying to have your own tefillah and trying to help them. So now you got to see b'shetach and know which parts of tefillah are, you know, and draw a line, right? If you see a kid beating up another kid in the middle of Shemona Esrei, and blood is coming out, that's the time. It's the middle of Shemona Esrei, but. Blood. The kid talking during Karbanos, there's no Shabbat talk. So you should say, stop talking. Good, right? So you have to know how to, you know, can't quantify it for you. Yes?
Could you daven b'chodesh earlier and then be motzei with the shirach tzivur?
Better to daven with a minyan. It's hard to daven b'yachid as well. By the way, if you've davened already and you're in a shul with a davening, you should daven with them, right? Shmona Esrei. Because it's wrong to be there and people daven Shmona Esrei, you're not davening. No, davk Shmona Esrei. If you've davened already, it's not right. Just like Kriya Shema, people saying Kriya Shema, you're supposed to say Shema with them. You don't. Saying Kriya Shema may not be Makabal Amach Shemaim. How could that be? Looks like you're a conscientious objector. Yes, you're allowed to daven a tefillah as a nedava. You do it as a nedava. It's best if you can add something to your tefillah. You throw in a little chiddush.
Like,
I have a lot of needs in my life. Let's think of one I wasn't thinking about in my last tefillah because I never think of anything. Yes.
Just to follow my question, if you already daven with a minyan beforehand and you're davening with the kids, how much of God's name can you say in order to, like, if you're saying Asher, I'll with the kids, you're saying whatever.
Sukkim, you can say them all the time.
So, but like, any part of davening, just
I wouldn't say a bracha, but if you have to, it's chinuch, right?
Does it have to be chinuch?
Mm-hmm. A psukim, you don't need a head to say psukim.
I'm saying,
mm-hmm. You have to like tell like whose names were so long he had to make them smaller. Like Lowenstein, Kalman Isser Pressburger.
It's a long one.
Kalman Isser. Where's Rafal Tzvi? You don't get our Rafal Tzvi? Together Tzvi. So wanted your name to be your normal size. Pagan!
I didn't know we were allowed to.
Those are your father's stories. His father had a chash of a Rebbe when he was doing yeshiva named Rav Shaul Liebman. None of you ever heard of him, right? He's a very interesting person. He used to call his father Pagan. Go figure. Okay. Other questions? Yes?
Is a Jew allowed to make money, for example?
Yes. Next question. The yeshiva's had too much of an effect on you. Yes.
By owning an abortion clinic.
Whoa, that's Misaya over Avera. It's Misaya over Avera. Absolutely not. It's also to kill non Jewish babies. Did I say something wrong in the beginning of this question answer session? Or how about other things where it just causes damage to people? To cause damage to people? Our responsibility is to build the world into a better place, but causing damage to people? I think it's also for Jews to sell cigarettes.
Yeah,
it's also to sell cigarettes. Also to sell cigarettes. I have had the mechira. You know the joke, right? A guy's a smoker. He doesn't know what to do. He's having a difficult time. He's smoking. He knows he has to stop smoking. So he goes to the Reform Rabbi. The Reform Rabbi says, look, you should know that in ancient times Judaism had rules. Now there aren't rules. You do whatever seems right to you, whatever society. Goes to the conservative guy. Conservative guy says, okay, don't smoke outside, smoke at home. He goes to the Orthodox rabbi and says, no problem, sell your lungs to the guy. Yes. For Goyim? Sure. It's a good thing. But the problem is what happens when Jews come in. That's why a Jew shouldn't own a non-kosher restaurant. Because there's a lot of Jews who eat non-kosher, unfortunately.
Wait, tell us
about
Sephardic. Tell us about Sephardic.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's a problem.
Tarfus. Non-shechted meat. If you know, if it's all kosher, it's okay.
But I thought you weren't allowed to make bas v'chalav for a guy.
Bas v'chalav for a guy. Ah, you meant cooking bas v'chalav for a guy. Right, that would be a problem. That would be a problem. But again, it's not shaykh anyway, because Jews are going to come. What are you going to say? No Jews allowed? No Jews and dogs allowed. Only goyim here. Jews, the ones hate themselves more than the goyim do. Yes?
Does the halakha of any ilcha kodim apply for non-financial tzedakah, i.e. chinuch, for example?
I think so. Why should it be different? Whether you're of a higher responsibility to help the people of your city in non-financial ways than people of other places. Josh, did you have a question? Forgot it?
No.
Okay, yeah.
What's this? I think it's discussed this around 6 times, but I wasn't there.
Yes.
What's this svara behind 1.5 days?
So listen to the shiur, because it's going to take a long time to explain, and
no,
I want to put everyone through it.
Not a comment, but...
Okay.
Because if I keep... If I wear this phone on the 8th day,
mm-hmm.
aren't you saying that it's really 1 day, but you're just not going to do malacha?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you say
that is correct. Okay, I think we should end because it's like tiring for people. So, just to remind some of the things we talked about in the beginning, if people remember, wow, it's much crumpled up here now. I've been playing with this too long. Yeah, so during Kaitz month, I'm going to give a sicha every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. And I think it'll be a nice thing for everyone to be there. There's a tish by Rav Brody 30 minutes after supper in the English library. And next week is going to be more complex than we had hoped, Baruch Hashem, because they're predicting a lot of rain. So make sure you bring enough svarim. You bring svarim anyway. Please let David Bassett know what sporting equipment you're bringing. Bring money, I suggest. You don't have to. If you want to buy some food there and if you want to go skiing. And what else was there? Okay. question of Chespin, yes.
How are we supposed to get all our stuff back?
Finishing.
Yam yam?
The people coming back to Yerushalayim and not going from Yam to Yam are going to take your stuff back on the bus that goes back with them to Yerushalayim and bring it to the yeshiva.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to make sure there are enough people. We're going to take it for everybody.
If there's a will of people to help. One of our friends suggested that maybe I should tell people you are taking your friend's stuff back because that's the way that it'll get done. And I said, it's better than having his friend ask him to do him a favor.
Oh.
And he said yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But so take this, going back to Yerushalayim, take this as your command from me to take your friend's stuff back.
If you're going back to Yerushalayim, you have the opportunity to do a big Maisa Chesed for everybody.
Exactly.
Shkoyach. Okay, I want to find out who's going to be the big Maisa Chesed person who's going to go back to Yerushalayim just so he can do the mitzvah and then come back to the Yamaya. Probably one of the Madrichim, I guess. Okay, other questions?
Sorry,
and also,
money and sports
equipment. Did I mention money and sports equipment? How many times did I mention it, people?
Twice.
Yeah. Once in the beginning, once in the end. We're done, people. I will be seeing you in Yirtzeh Hashem next Shabbos. I'm coming up to Chespin. Look forward to seeing everyone then.
I see
your picture on your picture.
I didn't know we all lived the old names.
Oh, he's up here?
I'm now mayor of this
community. Up! Here we go. It's alphabetical order. It's just how it came out. Diskin, up! Nice, no? Isn't that nice? Look at frame put on your wall. You can throw it out.